Hey, Sam, thank you for joining me. There is a beautiful symmetry to our having this conversation today because I first met you at a writers' conference last fall, and you got up in front of a room of writers and got everybody all fired up about writing their next book, which is what you do. If someone has not heard you speak, they should know this is what you do. And this was the I'm now working on the book that I had in mind then. As I've been working on it, your name keeps popping up as I interview people, of course. And then I turn to your book, Pop, to work on getting some title ideas and how to put the words around this. And now I'm interviewing you for the book. So I feel like I'm coming full circle with your unintentional. You didn't know you were my partner in this book, and here you are.
And you know this is that writers are a community, and aviators, pilots call it hangar flying. If they can't be up in the sky flying a plane, they want to be on the ground talking about flying a plane. And it's kind of like that with authors, right? We love to talk story and talk books.
That's true. So let me, you have, I mean, you speak about speaking and you speak about writing and you write about speaking and writing. So let me, how do you explain to someone who's not familiar with your body of work, what gets you out of bed in the morning? What is your motivator?
Well, that's that lovely Japanese term, ikigai, right? Which is a reason to get up in the morning, the purpose that gives our days meaning and momentum. And for me, I'm lucky I have a trinity. It's I write and I speak and I coach. So I do write books. I've got 9 books from New York publishers, from Pop to Tongue Fu to Someday Is Not a Day in the Week. And I coach. I have the privilege of working with clients on their TED Talks, their South by Southwest Talks, their UN Talks. And then, so I speak, I write, and then I coach, and I help people get their books out of their head and into the world and figure out their next. A lot of times people are ready for their next chapter and they don't know what that looks like. And we get to like figure out, connect the dots of their EEE, their experience, expertise, and epiphanies, and come up with a legacy project that puts and keeps the light on in their eyes.
Oh, that's such a wonderful way to put that. And what you demonstrate right there is something that you are so good at too, which is framing things into catchy phrases, into the words. I mean, you are a word nerd like I am, right? You are a word nerd and you are a quote collector, which are both things that I admire and love. So that's fun, your EEE. So I'm going to talk first a little bit about you and your experience. I would like to get at that. And then we'll talk about what you see in other authors, because I'm also interested in what we share, what we've learned beyond ourselves. So you have 9 books out there, which is an impressive collection over some period of time. So the books are a part of your career, the speaking is a part. How do they fit together as a platform? For example, you just recently published, your most recent book is Someday Is Not a Day in the Week, which is a lovely and inspirational book. How does that fit with what you're trying to do to help people express themselves? I mean, how's the book fit with the speaking and the coaching?
It's interesting, Anne, because we have all heard the advice about pick a lane, right? We're supposed to like pick a niche and stick with that niche. Now, I understand the bottom line benefits of that. It's just that have you ever seen the Leonardo da Vinci exhibit by any chance?
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm going to say, don't you? It's like, imagine if someone had said to Leonardo, no, just stick with anatomy, right? The flying, forget the painting, forget the like. No, it's like, he was a master at all these different things. And I am not comparing myself to Da Vinci. I am aligning with that. When I came out with Tongue Fu 30 years ago, I could have just done Tongue Fu for 30 years. It's around the world, 17 language. That is a career right there. However, I was then interested in confidence and why is it that some people are supremely confident wherever they go and other people who are talented and smart and so forth are not. So I wrote about that. And then I wrote about concentration. And I discovered through my work with Rod Laver that concentration is a skill. It's not this mysterious ability we have or not. It's something we can learn. And so the answer to your question is, I make my life my lab. you know, Annie Lamott said, writers get to live life twice. And so I keep my antenna up. And when I am called to something and curious about it, and I know it has value, then I do a deep dive into writing and speaking about it and hopefully sharing some best practices that might benefit others.
Yes. Yeah. And there's an overarching, so, you know, you were one of these authors who doesn't have a niche in terms of a confining little narrow space. But one author I talked about, it talks about having an umbrella, right? And you almost have an umbrella because it all has to do with communication, with, you know, finding and connecting with others, right? I mean, this is maybe your umbrella. But the idea of a niche is so confining to a lot of authors. And so it's something that people fight back against. So I love the example that you put forward with your career of how you do this. So you, when you're working on a new topic, here's a question for you. Do you speak your way to the book? Do you write your way to the speaking? Do you do them both at the same time? Do they inform each other?
The answer is yes. Yogi Berra said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. So I have done all of the above. For example, I had spoken on Tung Fu for several years before I got the book deal from our very first Maui Writers Conference. And that was a joy writing that book, Ann, because I just downloaded what I'd been doing. I had crafted those stories. I had honed those techniques. It had the continuity. It had been distilled into real life examples. The same with my What's Holding You Back book. The same with my concentration book. I had been speaking on them before I wrote, which facilitated and expedited the writing of those books. Someday I did the opposite. In fact, I took a creative risk, is that when I set off on my year by the water, there were no guarantees. In fact, I announced this at the National Press Club, and most people broke into applause and said, take me with you. And three people pulled me aside. One said, are you having a midlife crisis? And I assured her I was having midlife clarity. And another pulled me aside and said, in all seriousness, are you sick? She was assuming I must be on my deathbed to be making such a drastic move.
Oh.
And an investor pulled me over and he said, you know, Sam, he said, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. He said, you better keep this quiet, because if your clients find out that you're off the grid, you know, your business may not be here when you come back.
Really?
So, see, when I went on that year by the water, I knew I was doing it because I was ready for an adventure. I was ready for the opposite of my always. I was all that. There were no guarantees that I would write or speak about it, because I didn't think corporations would pay me for this, because they didn't want their employees to quit and go to Bali.
Yeah, true enough. So interesting. So that one you wrote first, that came more internally, and then, but you certainly speak about it, which is fascinating. I find it can be, you know, the writing can be a wonderful path to really clarifying. And I've talked to many authors who said, I really wish I'd done the speaking before I wrote the book, because now I can explain this so much more clearly than I could when I wrote, which is fascinating.
And it's both, right? It's not an either or. They're both valid and they're both circumstantial, depending on, is there an urgency and we need to get the book and we don't have the 3 or 4 or 5 years to speak on it first, right?
True.
And then the Someday book, you know, I know you've experienced this. People say, what were your favorite places? It's not the places I remember. It is the experiences. It's the Walden Pond story. You know, it's like the middle of the Texas, you know, hill country story. It's the swimming with Zach story. And when we have experiences like this, we know as writers, anything that is profound, that is transformative, that is pivotal, it deserves to be in a story, because it has that a potential to have that profound impact on others, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we, and you know, one way we live and own and share is by writing it, is by getting there through writing. Yeah, that's so great. I just love what you do, and the way that you approach your work is very inspirational, obviously. So now let me ask you, because you do work with so many authors, including some names that are incredibly impressive. So let me ask you, because I know that some authors feel that there's them, and then there's this universe of exalted authors that magically have a whole different experience of writing. So is that true when you work with the famous people, the big names, the whatever? Is it all magically easy and wonderful for them, or do they struggle with the same things we do?
This is your basic rhetorical question, isn't it, Anne?
Yeah, it is. It is. But you I'm asking. The answer to this, I have a strong theory, anyway.
You know, I think your theory would be proven out. Is that, you know, there are multimillionaires who have imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, they can grow a business, they can scale a business. However, sitting down and putting their thoughts on paper, and they're often very critical of themselves, perfectionists, and it doesn't come out perfect the first time. And so then they start judging themselves. And of course, the critical voice kills the creative voice. And there we go, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So do you know how I've helped many of my authors become confident in their voice, so writing becomes the joyful activity it's supposed to be?
Do tell. Do tell.
Another rhetorical question.
No, I want to hear. I'm on the edge of my seat. Yeah.
It's to stop thinking of writing as something you do at a desk. Yeah. Is that many people think I have to have spare time to write. Well, if we don't have any spare time, then we don't write, right? And many people feel I have to have a chunk of time to write, right? 2 or 3 hours at least, right? To get in that state of flow. And so let's use Terry Jones as an example. Terry was the founder of Travelocity and of Kayak. Well, Terry doesn't have time to write, but he's on planes, right? He has in time in between meetings and so forth. So are you familiar with otter.ai, OTTER.ai?
Yes, indeed, I am. Wonderful, wonderful stuff.
Well, what my clients and I do, we often storyboard their book, and I've got a great story about that next, if you would like. We storyboard their book, which is different than outlining it, and I'll distinguish between a storyboard and an outline. Once we have the storyboard, then when Terry walks out of a meeting and he knows, wow, that was a fantastic conversation, you know, we really solved that problem, we averted disaster, that the extraordinary nature of something that was not just business as usual, right? Big challenge, everyone pulled together, came up with a disruptive solution. You know, that deserves to be written down. Terry doesn't have time to write, but he has 5 minutes and he has Otter. And in the flush of the moment, he says, he puts us in the scene. Okay, there are 10 of us at the table. You know, it's like, this is an emergency meeting at 7 a.m. in the morning. You know, we found a bug in the product the day before we're supposed to send it. You know, we're all brainstorming. So-and-so says, well, why don't we do this? And everyone looks at him dumbstruck. What a perfect idea, etc. You know, and what, boom, 5 minutes. Now that's alive, isn't it?
Yeah. It not only solves the writing issue, it solves the storytelling issue. People, if you ask them to tell you a story, they freeze up. But if you just like put me where you just were, right when your emotions are still going, you're just going to, it's natural. We do this naturally. That's so brilliant.
Writing is just reenacting a situation with the dialogue and the emotion, right?
Yeah.
So that people feel we're there. We feel it's happening right now. And Robert Frost said, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader. No joy in the writer, no joy in the reader. And for many writers, writing becomes a grind. Well, if it's hard work for us, it's going to be hard work for the reader, right?
Yep, yeah.
And when you're like that, in that moment where you are still excited about that epiphany and how it solved that, and that is how using this little otter.ai, and if we have storyboarded and we go where we're hot, we don't go linearly, right? Because we not be excited about that chapter. Yep. However, this is something that we just saw something in Wall Street Journal as a great quote, and then we riff off of it. And then once again, there's joy in the speaker and in the writer and in the readers.
Yes, that's brilliant. Yeah, go where you're hot. That's great. I mean, I always say cherry pick the thing that you want, the most exciting thing to write right now. Just don't be one of those people. I'm one of those people who is always brought up to save the thing, you know, save your best thing for later. Don't eat the dessert now. It's like, nope. If you're a writer, you got to go for that tasty bit right away, because you may not feel the same way about it in a week or 2 weeks. Yeah.
You know, and you're referencing something in 17 years of Maui Writers Conference, our authors didn't agree on much. In fact, you know, Terry Brooks would say you have to write first thing in the morning, and Dave Barry would say I don't get going until the afternoon, and you have to have that on whatever. They agreed on two things, and one was ink it when you think it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And the other is what you're referencing is that books have a life of their own. Barbara Kingsolver said she couldn't wait to wake up in the morning and come downstairs to find out what her characters wanted to say.
That's great.
This is the woo-woo part of the conversation. However, you know, the muse, any writer who has spent any time understands that there is sometimes something is coming out our mind and out through our fingers that's better than we know how. And if we do not honor the muse, you know, if we do not cherry pick, if we do not go where it's hot, we are turning our back on this creative source and energy that is there for us if we tap into it.
That's right. And like you said, we're turning our back on the joy, you know, the joy of the writing, because that's where it comes from, is letting us work with that part of our muse. Even if you're writing nonfiction, even if you're writing something that's not theoretically creative, all good writing is creative, right? So yeah, that's wonderful. So what advice, and this is silly to ask because you've written so many books of advice, but I'm going to ask it anyway because this is what I'm asking people. What would you give somebody who has an idea that they feel strongly about, a purpose they feel strongly about, and they want to write a book, and they're teetering on the, how the heck am I going to do this? Should I go about it? Do you have any words of wisdom?
More rhetorical
questions.
You bet I do. Just happen to have something.
Conveniently.
I get to tell one of my favorite stories. Do you know who Sherry Salata is by any chance, Anne?
The name rings a bell, but I'm not placing it.
Sherry was executive producer for Oprah for many years, and then she ran Harpo and she ran OWN. And so I had an opportunity to be interviewing Sherry at a program one time. And in the middle of the interview, she said, almost as an aside, she said, well, if I ever write a book, I know what I'm going to call it. And I said, what? And she said, I did everything all wrong, and it turned out all right.
That's great.
That's a great title, isn't it, to see? Okay, so now that's not what the interview was about. So we went on. However, at break, I went up and I said, tell me you're writing that book. And she said, Sam, I don't know where to start. You know, it's like, boy, does she have stories, right? She put on Oprah's birthday party with Jerry Seinfeld and Beyonce and Michael Jordan and Chris Rock, you know. So she delivered a baby in a 7-Eleven parking lot, you know. Where do you start, right? Okay, we can, and now unless people are driving and listening to this, it's like grab some paper right now, because in 3 minutes we can do this, okay? So on a piece of paper right now in the upper left, just put 200 pages, okay? Let's just presuppose our book is 200 pages. It's not a doorstopper and it's not a who moved my cheese, right? All right, now put down 10. Let's presuppose that no chapter is more than 10 pages. Because we want a page turner, and this sets up the psychology of completion, right? All right, so that gives us 20 chapters, right? All right, write on your piece of paper right now, have 4 rows of 5 boxes. Okay, so 4 rows of 5 boxes. Now we go back to Sherry, or maybe some of your listeners, and you're saying, I don't know where to start. You just start putting us in the scene of these pivotal, transformational moments, right? Okay, baby in the parking lot, all right? The birthday party, all right? When she decided to put herself in her own story instead of just supporting Oprah's story, right? Do you know, often in like 5 minutes, people can, your word, can cherry pick their lessons learned or the steps to this or the most important points they want to make. It's all on one page. Now you got otter.ai and you think, all right, I'm going to keep it 10 minutes to 15 minutes max, which is going to bring it in about a 10-page chapter. Boom, that just expedites your whole book writing process.
There you go. You've got an ugly rough draft to start working with. That's brilliant.
Well, Annie Lamott can't be wrong, right?
Exactly. That's wonderful. Oh, Sam, you know, so I would encourage anyone to go to your books. I'm going to read through the ones I haven't gotten to yet, but you are just so generous and inspiring. And I think if we tried to count all of the authors in the world that you have inspired, we would quickly need a supercomputer. So thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your wisdom with me. It's wonderful.
You know, can I, two parting words?
Absolutely.
Or two parting sentences. Yes, I bet, did you know Dan Poynter by any chance, Dan? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as you know, Dan was almost like the father of self-publishing. Way back when, he was very clear that it was not right that New York publishers had the keys to the kingdom. And he felt that writing ought to be democratic, and that if you have a story to tell, you have the right to get it out there, right? Well, Dan has this wonderful quote. He said, "If you wait to write, you're not a writer. You're a waiter."
That's great.
And this one's for me. It's that I have had the privilege of working with people for more than 25 years on their books. And what I have discovered is that I have never met any author who was sorry they wrote their book. I have only met authors who were sorry they didn't write it sooner.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you. Those parting words.